Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1961.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President in 1996.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it. What does that mean for America?
Good evening, and welcome to the broadcast on Sunday, the 16th of December, 2012. Just a reminder, on December 23rd, the title of the broadcast will be The Pope's Visit in April of 2008. And on December 30th, the title of the broadcast will be JFK Exposes the Unseen Hand. The JFK speech on April 27th, 1961 will be covered in its entirety. Tonight's broadcast, the Council of Trent and the Jesuit Order, is about the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation. Now there are two words we have to understand on tonight's broadcast. One is the word Protestant and the other is the word Reformation. My guest tonight, Tom Fress from Inquisition Update on First Amendment Radio, will be defined the word Protestant Reformation and how it fits into tonight's broadcast. I want to talk briefly on the word Protestant and its definition. Now there are two ways to pronounce the word. One is Protestant and the other is Protestant. And tonight I will pronounce it Protestant. Why? We have to fully understand the word and its definition and how it fits into tonight's broadcast and comprehend its definition to comprehend tonight's message. I have had some constructive criticism that I focus too much on Roman history. Tonight I want to do a 180 and focus on the word Protestant and Protestant history. In 1776, 99% of the population were Protestants and less than 1% were Catholic. In 2012, 6 out of the 9 chief justices were Catholic and no Protestants. What they have done through the years, they have changed the definition of the word Protestant and how it is expressed. We are just using the word and just giving it lip service. Let's say it emphasizing the definition of the word Protestant. In 1776, 99% of the population were against popery and wanted no king to rule over them. And in 1789, our nation, with the Constitution and with the Bill of Rights, gave us a constitutional republic. Though the word popery or Protestant are not in the Constitution, it protects us from Protestantism, but does not protect us from popery. Here is the definition of popery: the doctrines, practices, and ceremonies of Roman Catholicism. But we do know that Roman Catholicism practice and write their own law with canon law, and that makes it incompatible with the Republic. So the end result of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is this. You can practice Catholicism, but you cannot practice Protestantism. See, they made popery legal and Protestantism illegal. In other words, they destroyed Protestantism and the right to protest, which opened the floodgates of ecumenism. Protestant definition, one who makes a protest, a member of one of those bodies of Christians that adhere to Protestantism as distinguished from the Roman Catholicism, one who is against the doctrines, practices, and ceremonies of Roman Catholicism. And against Protestantism and Catholicism are two opposing forces. Please understand the new dictionaries leave out the word Roman Catholicism, and that is why no one knows the definition of the word Protestant. They just changed the meaning of the word by just eliminating the word Roman Catholicism out of the definition. Now, when I use word definitions and say, in 2012, 6 out of the 9 chief justices are Catholic and no Protestants, let's say using word definitions, 6 out of the 9 chief justices are Catholics and practice the doctrines and the ceremonies of the Roman Catholic Church and attend a Red Mass every October. There are no Protestants, which mean there is no protest. Just do a Google search on the Red Mass. What is the Red Mass? A brief explanation from Wikipedia. A Red Mass is a Mass celebrating annually in the Catholic Church for judges, attorneys, law school professors, students, and government officials. The Mass requires guidance from the Holy Spirit to all who seek justice and offers the opportunity to reflect on what Catholics believe is the God-given power and responsibility of all in the legal profession. The Red Mass will be covered in its entirety on another broadcast. Tonight's title of the broadcast is The Council of Trent and the Jesuit Order. The two words we have to understand is the root word Protestant and the word Reformation. Now that we understand the word Protestant, Tom, could you define the word Reformation and how it fits into and is connected with Protestantism?
Hi, Walt, and good evening to you and your listeners. The Reformation, the Protestant Reformation, or the Protestant Reformation, was a reformation or a reforming of the minds and hearts of what were then Roman Catholics at the time when the Bible was translated into the language of the people rather than Latin, which was a dead language that they couldn't read. As a matter of fact, during that period of time, most people were illiterate and couldn't read the scriptures, even though it was in their own language. But nonetheless, the scriptures were translated into the languages of the common people, and people sent their children to school to learn to read so that they could read the scriptures for themselves. And once having read the scriptures for themselves, many became Protestants because they realized that what was described in the Bible was the biblical and historical Antichrist, the Pope of Rome, and the whore, which they now knew was the Roman Catholic Church. And having the wisdom of the scriptures and the message from the Word of God in a language that they could understand, it changed their beliefs. And they came out of the Roman Catholic Church, not only in protest of what she became known to them as the prophetic fulfillment of Antichrist, but that there was widespread corruption within the Roman Catholic Church. The church was selling indulgences, the forgiveness of sins, for money. And the Roman Catholic priesthood were corrupt beyond description. And the world was ready to reform and to reject Roman Catholicism. Christ. received him gave he the power to become the sons of the living God. And they now found themselves the vessel for Christ. They bore within themselves, on their, written upon their conscience, the law of God and the knowledge of God. They no longer needed a priest or a sacrament or a pope. And they came out of the Roman Catholic Church in droves. And because of the liberty that they now had in Christ, they realized how much through the papal governments that ruled over them tyrannically, and wrote constitutions preserving and protecting the rights of the people and making them liberated. And therefore they appointed kings to represent them in government, kings that would serve the people and not the Pope, and help to preserve their Protestant rights. And as the Protestant Reformation continued to kindle and spread, all of a sudden it was realized that most of the wealth of every nation was gobbled up by the priesthood, who were the landed, who owned the landed estates, who owned and managed the landed estates that were bequest to the Roman Catholic Church by Roman Catholic faithful. And so they stripped the papacy of the ownership of those landed estates, and they put those lands back into the production of each individual nation so that the people could prosper from it. And prosper they did. The money that was always allotted to go to serve the Roman Catholic Church was now placed back in the hands of the people where it belonged, and they put it to good use. They put their children in schools and colleges that were springing up all over the place. Literacy was improving, liberty was spreading, and affluence became the result of the Protestant Reformation. And Rome was literally put on the ropes. She was losing support, both in numbers and in money and in power and in influence. And so Rome had to act, and act she did. She responded to the Protestant Reformation by starting what we now know today as the Counter-Reformation. And the beginning of the Counter-Reformation was the establishment of the Jesuit Order. The Jesuit Order was created in 1540, not much more than 20 years after the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, which is usually regarded as officially getting its start on October 31st of 1517. In 1540, the Jesuit order was created, and it was a military order designed for the purpose of destroying the Counter-Reformation, destroying Protestantism, and any other protest against the Roman Catholic Church, and then to elevate the papacy to global status, global governing status, as the divine right replacement of the Son of God on earth, which we know today as Antichrist. The title of the Pope is the Vicar of Christ. And as I said on the broadcast last time, vicar is simply the noun form of the adjective vicarious, which means replacement of. So vicar is the same meaning as the prefix anti, A-N-T-I, which we find in the Bible. They have identical meanings. So Vicar of Christ literally means Antichrist. And he opposes Christ by replacing Christ on the earth. He is no replacement for Christ. He's a human invention. Now the Protestants realize this, and they would have no negotiations with Rome. Their minds were made up, not out of any grudging hatred, but but because of the knowledge of the scriptures and the understanding of the prophecies regarding Antichrist and its true identity in the world. The Jesuits had to snuff out that knowledge, and they took many, many means and methods to do that. First of all, they went on an inquisition to punish Protestants by burning them at the stake. And the next thing they did was they called into session what we know today as the Council of Trent. And the Jesuits started that council. It was their idea, and the purpose of it was to answer all of the criticisms that the Protestants had of the Roman Catholic Church. Excuse me. And not only were they to answer the criticisms that the Protestants had against the Roman Catholic Church, but they were going to use that council to retrench. Now, they used the term reform. They were going to reform the Roman Catholic Church. But they didn't reform the Roman Catholic Church. They simply restated the tenets of Roman Catholic canon law, which says that the Roman Catholic Church is the one holy Roman Catholic and apostolic church outside of which there is no salvation, and that the Eucharist is the literal blood, body, soul, and divinity of Christ to be sacrificed over and over and over on the altar of the Roman Catholic Church in the Mass, and that baptism is the source of regeneration, and that the sacraments are requirements of every Christian, and on and on and on. And after they reestablished all of the age-old heresies and abominations of Roman Catholicism, they then issued 100 anathemas, 100 damnations against anyone who believed otherwise. And count by count, they damned Protestantism to hell in the Council of Trent. It was the Counter-Reformation Council of Trent. I call it the Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation Council of Trent. And it drew the battle lines, a death to the finish between Roman Catholicism and Protestantism. And that war continues under the scenes even today, and especially today, and especially right here in Protestant America, where Jesuitism is allowed to prosper and practice, running 28 of the most prestigious higher institutions of learning in this country, namely Georgetown, Boston College, Fordham University, Marquette, all kinds of them, 28 of them. And they produce out of these universities graduates that are sympathetic to the Jesuit cause. Their purpose is to overthrow our Protestant constitutional republic, to likewise overthrow Protestantism, to make the United States of America a papal fiefdom and a global crusading, war-making nation for the Pope. And that's precisely what they've done. And I don't know, maybe I'm going too fast. Do you have any questions or comments so far?
No, well, one comment I might say, how have they been so effective and still stay under the radar?
Well, it's pretty easy, because the United States of America was founded on a tenet of religious liberty. It was no longer politically correct to criticize the Pope or any other religion. Religious liberty formed the foundation of this country. And so it became a controversial subject to talk about Protestantism in the terms that we've just now spoken of it, as a protest against the Roman Catholic Church. The Jesuits, also being a clandestine military order, and having already 28 institutions of the most prestigious colleges in this country, and serving in the highest positions of education and government, as was their custom throughout all their existence since 1540 to the present, simply operated under that tenet, that constitutional tenet of religious liberty. So they've been relatively hands-off in this Protestant country. And they've used every opportunity, every advantage available to them to promote their cause, to promote their anti-Protestant, their anti-Christ cause, but to do it in such a way that wouldn't raise the Protestant ire, if I can use that term to describe it. And they've been very, very successful at it. Now, in the 19th century, in the 1800s, there were many, many people in this country who were well aware of the machinations of the Jesuits and what they were doing in this country. And they wrote books about it, and they wrote sermons about it, and there were public discussions about that subject. But in the 20th and the 21st century especially, there's relatively no discussion at all about it. As a matter of fact, today, we're not concerned about Roman Catholicism at all. We've been given a diversion, a foreign boogeyman called Islam. And while we're off fighting papal proxy wars and now exercising crusades against the Muslims, the Roman Catholic Church gets all powerful in the United States. And together with the with the Vatican Council II being held in 1965, have worked to unite those churches that were once called Protestant to reunite them back with the Roman Catholic Church under the common name of Christian. In other words, they've literally lost their Protestant heritage. They've forgotten history. They've forgotten the hideous crimes of the Vatican and the papacy, particularly over the centuries. And they've squelched any talk about the Counter-Reformation and about the Jesuit order, and now just seek peace and unity and to unite that church once again and to establish the Pope's final goal, a new world order in the world. A new world order that is simply the old world order restored on a global scale. And it's happening right before our eyes. And there are precious few in this country who comprehend what's really going on, and even fewer who have the courage to talk about it. Back to you, Walt.
Well, using World War II as an example, how did they use the Counter-Reformation under the guise of war to their advantage?
Well, if you thoroughly study the wars of history, you realize that war is always given a pretense of political advantage. But what is generally forgotten is that politics is just a cover for religion. And that secretly, unbeknownst to the common people, the ulterior motive for every war is a religious motive. And that motive is to conquer those who protest the papacy, whether they were the Eastern Orthodox, who were the product of the first great schism of the Roman Catholic Church. Remember, the Eastern Roman Catholic Church finally separated from the Roman Catholic Church because they didn't believe in worshiping images and idols as they do in the Roman Catholic Church. And Rome has sought to destroy them at every possible opportunity. The same way with the Jews. The Jews, widely regarded by many as God's chosen people, Roman Catholicism has insisted that she is now the God's chosen people, and that to ensure her status as God's chosen people, they are obliged to kill the Jews. And also the Protestants, the product of the second great schism of the Roman Catholic Church, also must be destroyed to leave Rome to stand alone as the representative of Christ on earth. And her strategy has always been convert or die. And to impose death upon those who reject the papacy, whether it be Eastern Orthodox, Jewish, or Protestant dissenters from Rome, she disguises her inquisitions under the guise of war. And while the world believes there are political motives that are the instigation of these wars, literally speaking, the political guises are simply cloaks of this religious motivation. And it is the Jesuit order, the militia of the Pope, who was created for this very purpose, to pit nation against nation and kingdom against kingdom, to cite both parties to war, to supply the weaponry for both sides, to finance both sides of the war, and then to manage clandestinely behind the lines of both of the combatants in the war, to manage the outcome of the war, and then to sit at the table of armistice to settle the dispute in a way that most benefits and strengthens the papacy and his temporal and spiritual power in the world. That defines all the wars of the world. That is the strategy, the age-old strategy that the Jesuits have used since the beginning, and the scripture plainly tells us, wars, wars, and rumors of wars, and you may take that to mean wars, wars, and the threat of wars, and this is how the Roman Catholic Church, the church militant, this is how she promotes her position in the world, and she's nearly conquered the entire world. And there's no greater warring nation these days on the face of the earth than what was once known as Protestant USA. The United States of America now fights all of its wars to promote the papal standing in the world. And the eventual outcome of all of this is that the papacy will rule the world in the New World Order from Mount Moriah in Jerusalem, as the replacement of the Son of God on earth. Back to you all.
Well, you know, what I encounter is more that I dwell into history, and on a daily basis, it's hard to talk about world affairs without not bringing Rome into the subject. Tell me, how do you think that such a powerful organization as the Jesuits and the Vatican, that's been right out in the open for the last almost 2,000 years, how is it that they're swept out of the minds of the general public?
Well, it's not hard to listen to the mainstream media and realize that no mention is made of the papacy or the Jesuit order. They simply, the mainstream media, simply doesn't talk about it. Now, many media members are simply unaware. But we must understand, and those who are willing to do their own research will find out, that the biggest media magnates in this country, and I'll name one of them, Rupert Murdoch, it's a Knight of St. Gregory, a High Knight of Malta, devout Roman Catholic, and he swore an oath to defend the papacy, to subvert all the nations, and to submit them all to the papacy. And it is through his manipulation of the information that the American people receive that cloaks the activities of the Jesuit order and the Roman Catholic Church in the world, and especially in the United States. The mainstream media in this country is completely controlled by the Knights of Malta, and they simply will not tell the American people the true motive behind the wars that we fight overseas, or the motive behind them. And back to you all.
Well, one thing also is the media is always blamed on the Jewish influence. Could you comment just briefly? This is a big subject, but could you like in Hollywood? I've noticed the last year of my life, the last winter, I watched several movies. It doesn't matter what movie, but there was always a little reference back to Roman Catholicism in the movie.
How did they...
with Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and then Rome. There is no fifth empire, world empire for the Jews. Yet the Roman Catholic world would have us all believe that there's a Jewish conspiracy to rule the world. We can simply dismiss that out of hand because it simply does not fit with Daniel's prophecy. You can't even squeeze a Jewish empire into Daniel's prophecy. It won't fit. If it won't fit, you must acquit. Okay? So we have a Roman Empire. Now, to further confuse the world as to who really is the one who seeks to control the world, they promote this idea that the Jews, who God said would be the tail of the nations, not the head, that the Jews are the ones ruling the world, so they selectively put high-profile Jews in high-profile places to make them scapegoats, to make the world fasten their eyes and their hatred and their replacement theology attitudes upon the Jews, when in fact it's Rome all the time. It can be no one but Rome, the fourth and final empire on the world, according to Daniel's prophecy. Is a Roman Empire. And that Roman Empire was in power before Jesus was even born. And it will remain in power. Look, Jesus said, these are the last times, did he not? Jesus said, these are the last times. What was he talking about? The fourth and final Roman Empire was already in place when he walked the streets of Jerusalem. He was thus telling us, Daniel's prophecy is confirmed. These are indeed the last times. And that same Roman Empire will be in power until Christ returns. And that stone which was cut out of the mountain without hands will strike the image in its feet, and it'll be ground to powder and blow away with the wind. And then that stone will become a great mountain. And of his kingdom there will be no end. That's the reign of Christ upon the earth for 1,000 years. There is no Jewish empire prophesied in God's book. For a Christian to believe that the Jews are behind this conspiracy to create the New World Order is to simply deny the very Christ that they claim to serve and the Bible that they claim to read. And so every Bible-believing Christian can dismiss it from his mind categorically, that even though they see a Jew in a high governing place or a high banking position or a high position in the press, he's only there to take the limelight off the one Daniel showed the light of prophecy on, and that is the Roman Catholic Church and his Pope. Back to you all.
Well, you know, I always go back to this statement that Samuel Morris made. I mean, this is a quote from the Foreign Conspiracy Against the Liberties of the United States by Samuel Morris in 1835. The food of popery is ignorance. Ignorance is the mother of papal devotion. Ignorance is the legitimate prey of popery. Ignorance, the condition of being uneducated, unaware, uninformed. And I think that is one of the biggest tools is diversion.
Yes, ignorance of both the Bible and history. And where is that ignorance most vividly obvious in this country? It was from the Irish Roman Catholics that flooded into this country, who were shipped to this country by the Leopold Foundation of Europe. to empty the jails of Roman Catholic, delinquent Roman Catholics in all of Europe and especially Ireland, and to pay their way to this country so that they could occupy the voting booths and vote as their priests gave them instruction. And it is that ignorance that has become almost commonplace in this country. But, you know, Samuel Morse clearly sounded the alarm that the Roman Catholic immigrants of this country were brought here by a concerted effort of the papacy. And we might say the same thing today with the open borders with Mexico. 98% of all Mexicans that come into this country, both legally and illegally, are devout papists. And they vote as their priests instruct them. Though they be not very religious and not regular attenders of the Roman Catholic Church, they serve the papacy. They serve their priest, and they do as their priests say. That was the concern that Samuel F.B. Morse had over the Roman Catholics of Europe and Ireland who came flooding into this country, that the papacy was intentionally Catholicizing the United States of America, and that the ultimate target of all this effort was the destruction of Protestantism and all of our Protestant liberties. Nothing has changed.
More about R.W. Thompson?
Well, R.W. Thompson was Secretary of the U.S. Navy along in the mid to latter part of the 1800s. And he wrote a book in 1876, just after the promulgation of the papal bull and encyclical called The Syllabus of Error of 1864 by Pope Pius IX. And in that book, he demonstrates his professional prowess as the Secretary of the U.S. Navy in assessing the gravest threats to our Protestant constitutional republic, both foreign and abroad. And the thesis of his book in total is that the United States of America will never be threatened by any exterior force, that no military might will ever be assembled in the world capable of overthrowing our Constitution, our form of government, and our way of life, but that threat could only come from some foreign power from within the country, a domestic threat governed by a foreign entity. And he said, that only applies to one segment of the U.S. population, and that is Roman Catholicism. Every Roman Catholic is bound on pain of excommunication to pay his first allegiance to the Pope of Rome, a foreign dictator, bent on the destruction of Protestantism and the elevation of himself to global supremacy. And R.W. Thompson simply said that every Roman Catholic represents a fifth column in this country, and that on pain of excommunication, and to a Roman Catholic that means eternal damnation, to little by little, without raising the suspicion of Protestants in this country, to change our laws, to change our Constitution, to use the Supreme Court of the United States to reinterpret the laws and to use Congress and the White House to pass laws contrary to the intent and purpose of the Protestant founders of this country for the simple purpose of overthrowing and destroying Protestantism according to the Jesuit oath. And that's what they represent. I believe R.W. Thompson, without expressing any anti-Roman Catholic bigotry at all, simply objectively assessed the Roman Catholic Church and its Roman Catholic hierarchy, and particularly the Jesuit order, as being the single, only domestic threat that has the potential of overthrowing this country. And he predicted that it would be overthrown if Protestants, Protestants, went back to sleep, forgot history, and God forbid, reunited with that Roman Catholic Church, and all of which is the case today. Post-Vatican Council II, we don't have Catholics and Protestants anymore. We just have Christianity, and the Pope is the ultimate ruler of them all. You know, Catholicism, or the Church, rather, doesn't represent, as it used to, just 25% of the American population. Now, post-Vatican Council II, the Roman Catholic Church can add to its list of devotees the evangelical churches, and can now claim to represent well over 50% of the population of this country. And when they walk into Washington, D.C. with a bill that they want passed, they simply say, we don't represent 25%. We represent fully 50% of the people of this country. We have a mandate, and we will take you out of office if you don't pass this law that's favorable to our Pope. And the American people are seeing a reduction in their liberties. They're seeing a Nazi-style police state taking place, and all kinds of threats and tyranny. If they see their economy going to pot, they ought to take a look at how many Roman Catholics are in government, how many Roman Catholics are in the Federal Reserve Bank, how many Roman Catholics are in the military, how many Roman Catholics, whether they profess Roman Catholics or not, how many of them have sat in the White House, how many of them sit on the Supreme Court of the United States. You've already mentioned six of the nine. Six Roman Catholics on the Supreme Court, three are Jewish, but most important of all, there's not a single Protestant on that court. That is what R.W. Thompson was talking about in his book, The Papacy and the Civil Power. Back to you, Walt.
Tom, could you tell the listeners how to... Right now, Tom is reading this on air, R.W. Thompson's book. It's a book that's 800 pages. Tom not only reads the book, he's making comments, and you can follow his comments by going to his website. Could you give the information on your website?
Yes, the website is called www.inquisitionupdate.org. That's INQUISITION update.org. And Inquisition Update has a daily internet radio program that's heard Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Mountain, and 8 a.m. Pacific time on www.firstamendmentradio.com. So you can simply go to firstamendmentradio.com at 10 a.m. Central Time and listen to the program. And I read verbatim that book, page by page, making comments as necessary, folding in the scriptures as well, so that you can see that all of this is fulfillment of Bible prophecy, specific Bible prophecies that cannot be misunderstood once they are seen side by side.
Tom, we're almost out of time, and I want to thank you for coming. I really appreciate the fact that you helped.
I got a poor start in life, heading downhill real fast. Can't see the future,
see you next
week. Recalling the past.
I'm
at the crossroad of life, stuck on the tracks. I can't go forward, and I ain't going back. But there's a light at the end of the tunnel, they say. You just got to live life day by day. Keep the faith. Hold your head high, soar like an eagle and fly. I've been neglecting my family, I lost all my friends. Can't tell you where the day starts, don't know where it ends. I've burnt all my bridges and spent my last dime. I've got my life on hold for an indefinite time. But there's a light.